On Tech News Today, Samsung is getting into the home automation business. Microsoft is getting into the Snapchat clone business. And gossip site TMZ gets into the iPhone rumors business. They're doing it wrong. Stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 15th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, iPhone, and other Apple devices are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Over there, that's Jason Howell.
Right over here.
Sitting right over there.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic.
It's Friday. What are you going to say?
Exactly.
We also have Christina Warren, senior tech analyst at Mashable. Welcome, Christina Warren.
Hey, guys.
Now, your Twitter feed, your little sort of tagline there on your Twitter handle bothers me a bit because it says pundit in training. And we don't have pundit in training on this show. So you're a pundit. I hereby declare you a full-fledged pundit. Welcome to the guild.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm going to change my Twitter bio as soon as the show is Please. Over. And if anyone asks, I will say Mike Elgin said I was a pundit, so I'm a pundit.
Thank you. That's how this works, folks. When I see you're a pundit, you're a pundit. So you wrote a cool piece about a cool new project from 50 Cent of all people and Intel called Biosport Earbuds. Can you tell us about this new thing? I saw your piece and I read it. It's really actually looks like a really cool product.
Yeah. So Intel has partnered with SMS Audio, which is an audio company created by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, you know, as we all know from, you know, Indie Club fame. And basically they've created a pair of earphones that will measure your heart rate. Now, this in and of itself is not that unique, right? So there are already earbuds that will measure your heart rate. LG has some. We saw a few things at CES. And Intel actually showed off a demo at CES. What makes these different than the other heart rate monitoring earbuds that are out on the market is that rather than having to have like a weird fob that clips on that monitors your heart rate and being kind of a clunky additional add-on, this actually looks and feels just like a regular pair of wired in-ear earbuds. So what happens is basically the sensor is built into the earbud, and then it transmits the data using the microphone cable. And then what happens is basically the Runkeeper app on iPhone or Android or I assume, you know, Windows Phone will be able to take that data and then do things with it, like showing you, you know, certain statistics throughout your workout. So we don't have a price point. We don't have a specific release date, but it's going to be under $150 and out sometime fourth quarter.
50 Cent would be a good price point. Just my opinion.
Yeah, that would be a great point. I'm with you. I think that'd be a great price point. I don't think it's going to be that low, though.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
either.
He doesn't want to price himself out of the market right out of the
That's
gate.
That's right. You know? After seeing what Dr. Dre did and how much money Dr. Dre made with super overpriced headphones, I don't think he's going to be offering anything at a discount anytime soon. So that's not really the model for headphones. Well, let's jump into the news. We told you July 16th about a TechCrunch exclusive that reported Samsung in talks at that time to buy the home automation startup SmartThings for $200 million. Well, the deal is now done. We don't know the actual price. $200 million is what TechCrunch reported back when they were reporting the rumor. And just a full disclosure before we get into the conversation, SmartThings is a sponsor of some shows on the Twit Network. David Kendar is the Senior Vice President for Editorial at Reviewed.com and joins us now. Welcome, David Kendar.
Hi, how's it going?
Great, and thank you for bringing your own bricks. We here at the Brick House love bricks, and we just can't get enough of them. Let me ask you a quick question about SmartThings. Can you tell us more about SmartThings and the products they make? I mean, what is this company all about?
Sure. So SmartThings is a startup that was working to solve the problem of home automation. The problem with home automation is that you have multiple devices and multiple protocols, and most of them can't talk to each other because you have all of these companies developing them with vested interests in making sure that only their platforms succeed. What SmartThings has done is create hardware and software that can mesh all of these disparate elements together so that they can actually talk to each other.
So, David, I mean, what exactly is Samsung buying? Are they buying, you know, the products? Are they buying the brand? Are they wanting to get, you know, the employees? What exactly are they buying? Is it the developer ecosystem that's already around? What are they? What's the point of Samsung making this purchase, do you think? What's behind it?
Well, SmartThings has the largest developer community of any of the ecosystems. It's got a great Cinderella story. In a little over 2 years ago, it was a Kickstarter campaign, and now it just got bought for $200 million. They've done a really excellent job of developing relationships, partnerships, and trust in that developer community by maintaining an open standard. So it works with Zigbee, it works with Z-Wave, it works with Wi-Fi. And I think they were able to put themselves out there in a way that maybe a tech giant like Samsung couldn't do, because if it failed, it was just a startup that was going to take the failure. So why not let someone else out there and then just snatch them up for money, which Samsung, of course, has plenty of.
Now, of course, everybody's getting into the home automation racket. You have HomeKit coming from Apple. You have, of course, Google purchasing the Nest company. Is this a competitive play against Apple and Google, or is this something completely different?
Well, I just got off the phone with Alex Hawkinson, who's the CEO and founder of SmartThings. And I posed that question to him. And the way he sees it is that anyone that's creating an open standard is going to be able to work with all of those other companies. And I think that's his vision. Now, the reality of the marketplace is that, of course, these companies are at war with each other for your home. There's nothing but potential to grow, to take all of those dumb things in your home and make them smart. And I think you're going to see maybe a little friction between SmartThings' vision of what the smart home should be and what Samsung's vision is going to be. Now, that's my assertion and that's my prediction, but SmartThings is remaining an independently operated company within Samsung, and it sounds like they're going to work really hard to maintain that open standard. And that's the only way that smart home is going to get up off the ground, is if all of these companies can settle on one, maybe two common frameworks for all these things to talk to each other.
They will remain independent, as you said, but they will move from Washington, D.C. to Palo Alto in Silicon Valley. And they have 55 employees. Now, this company is, like you say, it's an open platform. Do you see at some point, looking at the larger industry, these open platforms interoperating to the point where the Internet of Things or the home automation movement, the home automation corner of the Internet of Things, is something where there's wide interoperability that's similar to the Internet or similar to the PC, where you have massively agreed upon standards like USB and so on? Are we headed toward that world, or are we headed toward a nightmare world where everybody's got their own platform, nothing works together, and users have to sort it all out?
Well, that is the big challenge in smart home right now, is that you have so many different standards. You have Zigbee, Z-Wave, Wi-Fi, Thread, Bluetooth. And the reason that we have an internet of all, not the Internet of Things, but the original internet, is because people were able to agree upon certain standards. Maybe they didn't agree upon them pleasantly. Maybe it took some muscle from some large companies to back a single standard and force everyone into those standards. And that's maybe what needs to happen again. But it's the Wild West right now in terms of smart home. You have a lot of great products out there, but do you risk buying a Nest and owning a Samsung phone if in 12 months they're both going to be great systems, but they can't talk to each other? I think that's the biggest fear for consumers. And that fear is not going to be allayed until we have an agreed upon standard.
All right. Before I let you go, can you tell us a little bit more about Reviewed.com? Are you part of USA Today? What's the relationship between you guys and USA Today?
Yeah, so Reviewed.com began as a startup about 15 years ago. It was CamcorderInfo.com, and I think you know Robin Liss, our founder. Mm-hmm. We were acquired by Gannett, which is the parent company of USA Today, about 3.5 years ago. So we remained an independent editorial organization, but we work very closely with USA Today and the rest of the Gannett network.
All right, well, thank you so much. And of course, We're going to be watching review.com and also watching this story and see what Samsung actually does with SmartThings. They always say they're going to keep it independent. But to me, that always just seems like a free thing you can say during negotiations to get them under your wing. And once you own the thing, you can do whatever you want. So David Kendar writes at review.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Dave Kender.
K-E-N-D-E-R,
not Kendar, Kender. My apologies for that. But thank you so much for coming on Tech News Today.
Thanks a lot.
In just a minute, we're going to tell you about Microsoft's Snapchat clone. But first, I want to tell you about Personal Capital. Personal Capital is going to save you a bundle of money, and here's how they're going to do it. Right now, you're wasting money paying too much in fees to manage your money. You may think to yourself, I'm not paying anybody in fees to manage my money. Yes, you are, because you have your money in bank accounts, 401ks, lots of things are going on. You're being charged occasional fines. There are a lot of things happening with your money that are costing you unnecessary expenses. And what Personal Capital will do is help you bring all that together and see where you're wasting money. They'll tell you exactly how to save money right off the bat. This is a free and secure tool that brings together all of your financial information to a single screen, which you can look at on your tablet. I like looking at Personal Capital on an iPad. I think that's the best interface personally, but it also looks great on a laptop, a desktop, a phone. You name it, you can keep track of your money on just about any screen on your body, including the screen on your wrist if you're wearing Android Wear. Personal Capital is one of the first companies to support Android Wear. And now, if there's anything happening with your money that you need to know about, Personal Capital will zap your wrist and bring it to your attention. You look at your wrist and you can take action based on the information it gives you. And that is a spectacularly useful feature. So why wait? Signing up takes just a minute and it pays big dividends. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions right away. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. That's TNT for Tech News Today. Personal Capital is free and it's a smart way to grow your money. And we thank Personal Capital for their support of Tech News Today. Well, Christina Warren, Microsoft's getting into the Snapchat clone racket. Everybody's doing it. And now even Microsoft.
Even Microsoft. Exactly. If you can't get Snapchat to make an official client for your fledgling smartphone platform, you might as well build a clone, right? I mean, isn't that what they say?
That is what I say it personally. I say that all the time. What's interesting to me about this project is that this isn't something that's being put out there by Microsoft's a software company, obviously, but this was put out there by Microsoft Research. And that is, can you think of another app, a smartphone app that Microsoft Research has released?
I don't know if Microsoft Research did this or not, but I remember the original Photosynth app for, I think that's what it was called, for the iPhone, which was the very first thing Microsoft ever released in like 2008. That was from a division deep inside Microsoft. But you're right. This is a unique thing. And Microsoft Research Dana Boy does amazing stuff. They've got amazing researchers. So that could actually maybe provide some interesting information depending on what they find from how people use this.
Yeah. I had forgotten about Photosynth. I used it for many years. That was, of course, an app that stitches together multiple pictures into a big panorama type thing, not only sideways like the Apple pano mode does, but all around, not quite a photosphere, but an incredible simulation. But the quality of Photosynth was fantastic. It was, for a while, the very best of this type of thing that you could get. Nowadays, there are other companies that are doing a pretty good job about this. Now, here's one other thing that I think is interesting about this so far. And again, this is probably not a final shipping product, but it also doesn't use location services.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's a little odd, right? Because a lot of times I think that part of the joy of Snapchat and things like Yo and some of these other services is, having an awareness of where the person is in relation to you or where they are when they send a message. So by not using that, that's more privacy privacy users might like it. But, you wonder about its utility, right?
Exactly. Now, well, we want to bring in Brad Sims, who's the managing editor at Neowin. Neowin is the site that essentially broke this story. Welcome to you, Brad Sims.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, did you discover this on the Microsoft Research page?
So we monitor a lot of different feeds that come from Microsoft, one being their developer channel, one being Microsoft Research. And this just kind of came across the agenda. And here we go. We have this Snapchat competitor. But frankly, if you use the app, it's terrible. I was trying. it's like... I hate to use this analogy, but it's a lot of things that like that come out from Microsoft, especially from the research division. The concept is there. You can see what they're trying to go for. But I was using it with a couple other colleagues this week, or I should say the last 24 hours or so. And I mean, here you can sum up the experience and just this little spinning thing. Like every time you load it up, it has to reconnect to this thing, and you just sit here and you wait. And you can see how long this experience takes. And what happens is, there you go. You finally get into like a little room here, and you can share photos, and you can set either a timeline or a number of times somebody can view it. And once they're done, then it kind of flips over like a live tile and says expired. And live ones that you can still click, you can see will still kind of jump around and whatnot. Yes, it is like a Snapchat competitor from the aspect that, hey, you can send time messages. But from the execution perspective, it's not a prime time app, and you really can't use it. There is an app on Windows Phone called Six Snap that allows you to tap into the Snapchat network that would be much better. But we have seen other apps come out of Microsoft Research, Photosynth being a fantastic one. They just released Climatology and a few others not too long ago. And it almost just kind of seems like they just shove things out the door and say, hey, does this work? And then if it does, then they bring it into something else. People were saying it might be kind of interesting if they brought this functionality to Skype, because Skype is their premier messaging platform. Hey, why not give it the same type of functionality as Snapchat and bring it all in-house? But that's where we're at with it. It's, it works technically, and you can invite people into the chat room, if you want to call it that. but the execution is quite bad. There's no other way to put it.
Okay, so you're telling us, you know, this is a terrible app. It takes longer to open than you can actually, you know, the amount of time you can view a photo. But all of that aside, yeah, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Skype integration, and I had the same thought. I thought, you know, this would be really cool to do in Skype. If Microsoft were to try to add this type of ephemeral messaging, because Windows Phone is a smaller user base, and I'm not trying to hate on the Windows Phone fanboys. Like, I really like my Lumia phones. They're really great, but it's a small user base.
Right.
Do you think that they would have to do something like that, like make a type of Skype integration if they really wanted it to gain traction to actually be worthwhile?
Very much so. As a standalone product, when you think cool and edgy, and this is a problem for Microsoft, you don't think Microsoft. They build great stuff, and Windows 8 was probably a little too far forward, and they're bringing it back with Windows Threshold. But these types of apps, especially with their privacy issues, I mean, they've been doing a lot of work with Brad Smith going out publicly saying, hey, we don't work with the government. But at the end of the day, they're still kind of like the big brother. They own everything. They don't have that gut check feeling that, you know, if I give Microsoft something, it's always going to be mine. They're still working through that stuff. And you're right. So you release an app on a platform that has roughly 2% user base. To get the volume that you need, like Snapchat has, it's just not a reasonable expectation unless they bring it to other platforms, like you said, with Skype. If they brought it to Skype, imagine that functionality is now on everything. It's on iOS. It's on Android. It's on the desktop. Skype will eventually be integrating with SMS here in a little bit. There's some rumors around that stuff. So the functionality, in my opinion, is they're just seeing, can we make this work at scale? Get it out there. Let's see what happens. Let's see what the community says, and then see if they really want it. But as will they ever be able to build a true Snapchat competitor? No, they can't.
To summarize, time-limited messaging is a feature. It's not a product. So build the feature into the messaging apps you already have, Microsoft, and put Microsoft Research to work doing some of the stuff it does really well. Microsoft Research is a fantastic research organization, mm-hmm. and they come out with all kinds of great technology. They're not so great with products, and Microsoft is definitely not great about getting the technology developed within Microsoft Research into products. Those are two areas they really need to work on, and this is yet another disappointment. But I think with Satya Nadella, this is a big opportunity for him to sort of break down those walls and get the technology into the hands of the product people so they can ship elegant products to thrill us all instead of also ran too little, too late, things like this that don't really work that well. So Brad Sims writes at neowin.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at bdsams. Thank you so much for joining us, Brad Sims.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Great scoop, Brad.
Thanks.
The Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that Apple plans to ship its first Sapphire iPhone 6 and smartwatch screens this month. Apple's $700 million factory will produce at full capacity twice as much Sapphire as the rest of the world's manufacturers combined, according to the article. This is when I first saw this article, Christina Warren, and started before I read it, I thought, oh, you know, I thought we'd already established that they're using Sapphire. We've already pretty much established that they're doing
an iWatch. We saw the video. Yeah.
Exactly. But I went into the details of this, and they went into all kinds of crazy, crazy details. So let me just give you some facts that will blow everyone's minds. Their Mesa, Arizona factory is a 1.4 million square foot factory. It's about the size of 24 football fields. Can you even imagine a factory of that size? I mean, is Arizona even that? I mean, it's like it's
right.
That is a gigantic factory. Some of the other details that they came out with is, of course, we know that they're working with GT Advanced Technologies, who's a materials manufacturer associated with Sapphire. And GT Advanced Technologies is actually, did they build the furnaces at a cost of $578 million, that's the vast majority of the money Apple spent on this, but they're going to be operating them for Apple. And so Apple is doling out $100 million payments as they make their essentially make progress with certain milestones. And it's just a gigantic operation. They're also innovating with Sapphire, doing something nobody's ever done. Ultimately, their process is resulting in, you know, what they do is they churn out a giant brick of Sapphire and then they carve the screens out of it. It's a kind of an inefficient process, but the process that Apple and GT are working on is going to result in a much larger brick, which is supposed to reduce costs. So it was a really interesting article, and also interesting because of the timing they claim is going to happen with this happening this month.
Yeah, no, I think it's super fascinating. And I think your last point about how they're kind of trying to drive the price on the article went into some detail. I think apparently it's, you know, a Sapphire screen is something like $16 to produce versus, you know, $3 for Gorilla Glass. But if Apple can do what Apple is so famous for doing so well, which is basically kind of own the entire supply chain and do what they can to drive the pricing down, then they could potentially be ahead of the market curve. And if they've already gotten in with how to, you know, get costs down, get the manufacturing process really nailed, it might be worth taking a small hit on margins long term, especially if you're looking about, you know, think about durability, which for something like a smartwatch or an iWatch or whatever is certainly going to be key.
It's expensive for Apple to fix broken iPhone screens, and analysts are saying that there's a possibility that the use of Sapphire will reduce the need for them to fix screens because they'll shatter less often. And as I understand it, and my understanding is not perfect in this technology, but as I understand it, a scratch when you drop a phone, there are many types of drops where the glass will either shatter or it won't shatter, depending on whether or not there are scratches on the surface. And what Sapphire does, Sapphire shatters just like Gorilla Glass does when it's scratched, but it's much harder to scratch in the first place. And so the idea with Sapphire is you end up with a display that doesn't scratch, and if it doesn't scratch, it won't shatter. It's less likely to shatter if you drop it. Of course, everything will shatter if you drop it with enough enthusiasm. But that's the play here. And if, you know, Apple does everything at scale, you figure, you know, they ship a couple hundred million phones, and out of those, some percentage of those shatter, and they have to fix those. And, you know, if they can bring that down if they can cut in half, for example, the number of screens that they have to replace, that's a huge, huge savings, mostly in the personnel of the Genius Bar and so on to replace it, but also in materials. So there's they're probably going to take a hit on margins, or they're going to raise the price and take a hit on volume because it's a higher price, or they're going to save a little bit of that through the reduced need for them to replace screens.
Yeah, no, I think that over time, they're probably looking at it. It'll probably amortize based on what you're saying, you know, the reduction in replacements and in repairs. And once they get the cost down for the manufacturing process. But I also think, you know, just as they were really early with capacitive touch, and they've been really early with a lot of their chip designs, you know, when Apple goes forward and they nail the supply chain, you know, the same thing was with flash memory. You know, they bought up everybody else's flash memory, you know, they can really put the beating on their competition because they can make it really hard for anybody else to even get access to those materials.
Absolutely. Well, in another story, Microsoft is, of course, coming out with its next version of Windows, which is expected to be called Windows 9, and it may be coming sooner than we thought, at least for some people. Can you tell us about that, Christina?
Yeah, so our friend Mary Jo Foley over at ZDNet broke the story that Microsoft is basically expecting to deliver a tech preview around late September, and it's supposed to be open to the public. You know, Microsoft has done this before. They did it with Windows 7. They did it with Windows 8, where they've, you know, allowed people to download previews. But from what Mary Jo was writing, you know, it seems like this preview will be a little bit easier to update. Sounds like maybe they're taking more of a play out of Apple's playbook with Yosemite in terms of, you know, having monthly updates come out so that users can be more abreast of what's happening. And it might not be as, you know, developer focused, meaning that they might be trying to sell this more to regular lay consumers. And, you know, I think that this is really kind of a culmination of a lot of things. Obviously, you know, the response to Windows 8 and 8.1 has been fairly negative. And, you know, they're doing what they can, I think, you know, with the design changes and they've announced with a threshold, bringing back the start menu, maybe getting rid of charms, allowing modern apps to be in Windows, things like that, that are answering some of those complaints. And I think the sooner they can get out even a beta to consumers who are, you know, maybe looking at other platforms, definitely the better.
Yeah, and of course, Satya Nadella famously said that that Microsoft would be coming out with one version of Windows. That turned out to not be true. They're going to have a very, you know, yet again, another confusing lineup of different options for people, which is a big mistake. I wish they would fix that. I think that that's a big advantage for Apple. Apple,
yes.
At least from a perception point of view, has one version of their operating system. And of course, they make all the hardware as well. Which doesn't hurt, but Microsoft always has these confusion. Should I get this? Should I get Home? Should I get Pro?
Right.
And it's. I think there's some buyer's remorse and so on. But I'm glad to see this coming out. We'll get a chance to try it. And of course, I think Microsoft really needs a home run regarding Windows. There's an open question about whether or not they can continue to maintain the kind of dominance they've had historically. And in order to do that, they're going to need to do something kind of impossible, which is that they have to move the world off the WIMP user interface, the Windows icons, menus, and pointing devices user interface that's been with us for 35 years now or whatever it is, 37, whatever it's been. It's an old, old, old paradigm for computing. We need to move to a future where it's mostly touch and voice-based and more like smartphones and mobile devices are now, but on the desktop. So how do they do that without making everybody mad? They try to do it with Windows 8 with the new sort of Metro UI stuff, and people kind of rebelled against it, and so now they kind of backtracked a little bit. So they've got a real problem on their hands. They need to own the future without making everybody mad, and people are expecting what they've done in the past. So it's a kind of a pickle, and we'll be really looking at Windows 9 for that reason. Will they be able to move us into the future and still hang on to their huge user base?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed exactly the challenge they're facing. And it was a challenge they faced, you know, 2 years ago when they released Windows 8. And unfortunately, 2 years have gone by and nothing's changed except people are even more adamant about not wanting to use the same interface on the desktop or not being comfortable with it. And I think, you know, the big thing too, you know, Microsoft has historically had such great developer relationships, but the apps really never came to, you know, the modern UI. You know, the Windows store is still really far behind where I would have expected it to be. And I think that's one of those things, you know, they're going to really need to focus on too, if with Threshold, regardless of what changes they make on the desktop front, you know, make sure that developers are building for these new tools and these new APIs, because if their vision is one Windows, even though it's going to have 18 different SKUs, you know, but it's going to be essentially, you know, the same core component on Xbox and on the phone and on tablets and on laptops and what have you, then they really need to make sure the developers are buying into that, because as long as there are apps that won't work all places and as long as developers are still building things for the old, you know, WIMP era, no one who buys a computer and who's using stuff is going to want to switch over.
And Satya Nadella, if you're watching, and I know you do watch every show, my advice is developers, developers, developers. That's the key to success for Windows. Well, in just a second, we're going to read you some very interesting email from one of our fans. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle wants to buy your used gadgets, and you want to sell your used gadgets to Gazelle. And the reason is they'll give you really good money for something that isn't doing you any favors in that drawer or in that box or wherever it is you've got your old device. It's time to let go. You got to let go of those old devices and hang on to the money that they send you. All you do is you go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. smartthings.com. Find your item, tell the condition, and they will give you a price. Then they'll send you a box. You put the device in the box. They pre-print the shipping stuff on it, and they just put that on the outside of the box, and off it goes. And they pay you fast by PayPal or check. Or if you use the Amazon gift card option, you get an extra 5%. That's the one I always use because I like that extra 5%. I'm going to be buying stuff on Amazon anyway, so I might as well get free money. They will also wipe your data. So if you have any information on that, you should erase it before you send it in. But if you don't, or if you don't do a good job of erasing it, you don't have to worry about it because Gazelle will completely erase your information. So nobody will ever be able to extract your personal information from the device, no matter what. Gazelle's paid more, nearly $170 million to more than 1 million customers. So find out what your iPhone is worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Well, TNT fan Monika Brooks sent us an email about our lack of coverage of the events in Ferguson, Missouri. And I appreciate this email because I've been grappling with this, but let me read her email to you. She wrote, "I want to start out by saying how much I enjoy listening to TNT every day. I was disappointed with the lack of discussion of the role of technology and media in the recent protests in Ferguson, Missouri. It seems a perfect and relevant story considering the different ways police have attempted to suppress official media coverage and how Twitter and cell phone video shared via different social platforms have been used in a powerful way to communicate the information to the public." And we have a picture of Monika as well, Jason, if you want to throw that on the screen. "Moreover, it addresses multiple aspects of journalism and technology on which TNT prides itself in examining. I was particularly surprised with the lack of discussion of these events because the attention that was given to the use of technology in various protest movements across the world. I hope you'll take the time in your show to cover the role of technology in this protest and other such events in the United States." And Monika, you brought it up, and so now we are talking about it. You're absolutely right about this. I grappled with this story and about covering this for Tech News Today. And Christina Warren, I think you might be able to appreciate that. We want to keep this show all about news events that take place in technology. Now, the events in Ferguson are far more important than any story we've covered on this show all week. I can tell you that right away. But the struggle we've had is that where is the news angle in terms of technology? Yeah, there's news. And so for those of you, we have an international audience. So for those of you outside the United States who may not be following this as closely as Americans are, essentially the story is this. An 18-year-old named Mike Brown was shot and killed by a police officer over the weekend in Ferguson, Missouri. Okay, and what happened after that is there were demonstrations and protests and so on, and those were greeted with a radically militarized police presence. The police showed up with riot gear and, you know, more heavily armed, literally more heavily armed than the troops who invaded Iraq. And they were shooting tear gas and rubber bullets and this sort of thing. Social media and digital technology spread the news of this and gave everybody an immediate glimpse. Twitter went crazy over this story. And then as a result of this pressure, police were replaced by highway patrol, who were just like ordinary police officers, not armored, none of that stuff. And so the social media and technology aspect of this seems to have had a very good effect. And there are multiple angles to the story. There's, of course, the race angle. Of course, there's the police angle, the police militarization angle. There's, of course, the tech angle that involved social media, camera phones, hacking, the internet. All of that was present. However, none of the technology parts of this were actually new per se. And so I did want to talk about this. I do want to talk about this story. It is fascinating from a technology point of view, but it didn't quite make the show precisely for that reason, because for example, if somebody is using a new platform, or if Google stepped in there and set up a new site, that, you know, those would be something brand new in technology that would be related to this story. So I don't know. What do you think about this, Christina Warren, about the technology angle of the Ferguson situation?
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit in that there wasn't enough of a tech angle to cover it. While it's true that there was maybe nothing new, there wasn't a new platform or new way of media being spread. That's absolutely accurate. We've seen this over the years. We obviously have seen it, you know, with Arab Spring. We've seen it with other United States events. But I think what makes Ferguson, at least in the United States, and very, very unique, is that the mainstream media virtually blacked out a lot of the coverage. There was almost no coverage of the riots that were happening, and especially Wednesday night. In fact, you mentioned, you know, that it was all over Twitter. It was all over Twitter because CNN, MSNBC, and the rest of them didn't start covering until they kicked cameras out. And Livestream.com, guys, can you come down? Can you quiet? Livestream.com was the only place that was really showing what was happening on the ground. You know, citizens were being arrested. The same thing was true in New York City last night. I was at a rally that started in Union Square. It became a protest march, and the cops ended up barricading, you know, a few hundred people before releasing them. And the entire thing was captured through social. When I showed up at the rally in Union Square last night, there was one news van and from a local news station. And like the last place ratings local news station, I might add. Nobody else from mainstream media was there. So I think that what's interesting, and it's both a tech story and a media story, is that the only way this has been getting out, and I think that technology has actually forced both the police to finally release the name of the officer. That a lot of that pressure came from Anonymous and from the internet and from other activist groups. But I think also the citizen media and citizen journalism forced the mainstream media to finally pay attention and address things that otherwise may have really kind of gone unnoticed or at least uncovered.
That's a very brilliant insight. See what a pundit you are. You are a pundit, and I think I want to thank Monica Brooks for bringing this, setting the agenda for us on this, and bringing this into the show. And remember, this is your show. If there's something that it's important to you that we're not covering, you think we should be covering, please send us an email and call us. We'll give you the contact information at the end of the show. And you can set the agenda for us as well and put these things on the table. So it is an important thing. And I think that other Twitch shows are likely to mention this as well, possibly Twit or other Twitch shows here on the Twit Network. So anyway, we'll be watching it. It certainly is major, major news and very important. Everybody should be paying attention to it. Well, in a follow-up, we've been covering Google's Android Wear platform for some time, and now Google is advertising it. And these look like expensive ads, too. Here's one of four ads that appears online today. Hit it, Jason.
Okay, Google. How much does an elephant weigh? She wants more.
Okay, Google, how do I get my smartwatch out of the elephant's intestines? You're going to have to speak up. That looks pretty cool. And then there's one long ad, and then there are three 15-second ads. I assume that those are going to end up on TV. They're certainly on YouTube. And so that looks pretty interesting. But it is also interesting to advertise essentially a platform, Christina Warren. I mean, I don't think I recall ever seeing an Android commercial.
No, I don't think there's ever been an Android commercial from Google. They have done Chrome a few times. We've seen a couple of Chromebooks, but I remember Chrome, I think that was like Google's first Super Bowl ad was for Chrome. There have been a couple for like Google Search, but this is this might actually, if it makes TV, it might be the very first wearable TV ad. No, that's wrong. The Galaxy Gear obviously had lots of ads. But this, it's interesting because really, I mean, they're advertising Android Wear, but really what they're doing is they're advertising Google Now. I mean, to me, it's not an Android Wear ad. It's a Google Now ad.
That's a great point. And I really, I have this sneaking suspicion that Google Now all along has been a wearable play, and they've had it on other platforms to get it developed to the point where it could be used in wearable because it's so well suited for Android Wear and other wearable devices. It's so well suited for Google Glass. It'll be well suited for just about any sort of wearable platform you can imagine. So
absolutely,
I was going to say, do Nexus devices qualify as Android? Because Google's definitely had ads about Nexus devices, but I don't know if that qualifies.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I think maybe the difference is this is the platform rather than
platform versus hardware. Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I couldn't tell if it was the LG. I think it was the LG that was in the photo, but it might have been the Samsung. They look the same. They're both ugly. So, you know, but it's interesting, yeah, that they're doing this sort of a push. Now let's just get more devices out and get more apps, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. And I can't wait for that Moto 360. Can't wait to try it.
Me either.
Yeah. So
just went out. September
5th.
5th, yeah. 5th,
the day after the announcement. So we expect the announcement on the 4th and then probably start shipping them to the people who are at Google I.O. on the 5th. That's my guess. So we'll see how that goes. Well, the celebrity gossip site TMZ posted pictures of what they claim is probably the first photos ever published of a fully assembled iPhone 6. Sadly, the pictures show a well-known Chinese knockoff that runs Android. Any iPhone blogger can easily spot the problems with the image, and several already have. For starters, TMZ's phone looks like it's running iOS 7. Of course, the iPhone 6 runs iOS 8. And second, the Mail app is called Email. Apple doesn't have an app called Email. And 95Mac's Benjamin Mayo, who's been a guest on this show, pointed out today that the typeface for the calendar app is all wrong. Now, Apple does something really cool with the calendar app, which is that the app itself always shows today's date. And they use a very specific type of font rendering, and Benjamin Mayo can tell that the font that they're using on this app is just a canned font. It's like, you know, it's just a, it's not rendering it using the technology that, that Apple uses. So nice try, TMZ. They had a sort of a headline that basically talked about geeks sort of gushing over this, but instead of those sorts of headlines, they should turn to the geeks and ask them, is this real or not? Because this particular fake iPhone has been around for a little while.
No, exactly. I mean, to me, there are two great things about the story. One, it's awesome that now suddenly, like, TMZ, this is how mainstream the iPhone is. This is how mainstream tech is, that TMZ is reporting on iPhone 6 rumors. Like, that, you've reached the complete apex when that's happening.
Yeah,
right?
It's not, so it's not awesome. That Lindsay Lohan has an iPhone 6. It's
exactly.
Like, here's the iPhone 6.
I mean, we've seen it go to mainstream media, but when it hits like the celebrity gossip media, like that's like the amazing apex of just this is like the threshold. This is saturation, right? But the thing that I also love is that, you know, Benjamin Mayo, you know, was able to point out all of these, you know, deficiencies in the fake photo. Why? Because Apple fans, and I'm one of them, are freaking crazy, obsessive nuts and go over every frame of every screenshot of every grab of every video like it's the Zapruder film, you know, basically like mapping out the entire thing, what's real, what's fake. So I love that. I love how obsessive and crazy Apple fans are. And I love that this is a big enough story, the iPhone 6, that TMZ, even though they didn't check, even though they should have thought that, hey, we should like slap exclusive on this and put this on our website.
I think what this does is proves that the iPhone itself is now a celebrity.
That's right.
There you go.
Exactly.
Oh,
and,
totally.
And who knows? This could be one of the best Android phones out there. You know, it's an amazing. I've seen even video of this knockoff. It's an amazing replication of based on rumors.
Are we sure Xiaomi doesn't make it? Or excuse me, me.
It's the other. Yeah, it's that one. Yeah, it's. I think that's who does make it.
I was joking. I was being facetious.
But the company. We'll do a follow up on this on the company that makes it. But there's a company that always does the knockoffs, and everything about the phone is a knockoff from the name of it and everything. It's actually quite a competitive industry within China to who can come out with the best fake iPhone. It's really kind of a strange thing, but. So we'll follow up with that. I love these knockoffs and they're so goofy.
Me too.
And of course they run Android and they kind of function for the most part. So
are you talking about the Goo phone? Is it the Goo phone?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
I believe that's it. Because they've had other phones that look strikingly similar and, you know, right down to possibly the name, but
yeah. Anyway, there's the gold Goo phone. Well, our TNT fan of the day today is Kevin Buckstiegel in Chicago, Illinois, who posted this picture on Google+. Look at that. Look at that. That's a lot of screens. That's a lot of screens right there.
That is a lot of screens.
Yeah. And there we are off on the left there. But speaking of Apple fans, look at that. Boy, big, big Apple fan there.
Well, it looks like my desk.
Exactly. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook using the hashtag #HowDoYouWatchTNT, and we will find it. And that is the tech news today. Christina Warren, what are you doing this weekend? What do you do besides go to political protests in New York City?
Well, there's a lot of that, and there's some barbecues. It is August in New York, so everybody's vacationing or having barbecues or garden parties or whatever. So that's what I'm probably going to do this weekend. Might try to hit up the movies. We'll see.
Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet?
I finally saw it. I was sick last week, but I finally saw it. It's awesome.
And,
love it.
Okay,
love
there
it,
you go. We're also a movie review show, so awesome. Two thumbs up. On Guardians of the Galaxy.
Film Girl says two thumbs up. There
you go. All right. And she's a pundit, too, so you can trust her. Well, thank you so much, Christina Warren, for joining us as our guest co-anchor today.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, and many other options. Just choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. Please follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is Tech News Today TV. Join our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and you'll find our community. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send an email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.